providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm happy to report that I have back on the show with us Byron King, longtime newsletter writer with Agora, currently writing for St. Paul Research. You can also find Byron's recent work at investorintel.com. Chad, unfortunately, is on another call for this segment, so it's just going to be Byron and I chatting, and we're going to very much focus on resource stocks. Byron, I last saw you at that Vancouver Investment Conference in Vancouver about a week and a half ago. We sat down, chatted about some of the stocks, and I said, Byron, I got to get you back on the show because you are really up to date on a wide range of resource stocks, and I think you carry a very level-headed approach when it comes to analyzing these stocks. Broadly, I think we can say that most resource stocks, just like almost every other stock in the markets, seems to be under pressure. I do want to start with some of the larger companies then, because the larger resource companies, their health seems to be pretty strong. Metals prices broadly higher. Yes, costs are rising, but these companies are building up pretty large cash positions. And we even had a company like Barrick recently buy back $1 billion worth of stock. Unfortunately, their market cap dropped by about $1 billion after that fact due to the market downtrend. But as you view the top of the pyramid type of resource stocks, Byron, what's your assessment of the overall health of these companies?
Well, it is great to speak with you. Thank you so much. It's been too long since we've had one of these podcast talks. As far as the big guys go, you know, what you said was, you know, absolutely echoes what I think. We're in a really sweet spot in terms of their cash generation. But how do they generate that cash? They're the big guys, you know, the big mining, the Barricks, the BHPs, the Rio Tintos, whatever. They are generating all of this cash by digging up deposits that were discovered, you know, pick a number, 30, 40, even 50 years ago. And, you know, they just happen to be in the sweet spot of the market where, you know, the cash is rolling in. And so management seems to think, many management teams at the top of the pyramid, many management teams seem to think that their job is mostly to manage that cash and feed it back to the shareholders in dividends, feed it back to the market in general in share buybacks. And, you know, and you want to be careful of going overboard with that. You mentioned Barrick, you know, you buy $1 billion worth of shares, then the share price, you know, the market cap drops because it's a wash, okay? Be careful of doing that. There was a company that was making huge amounts of money for a decade, just raking it in, cash, 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 and they did nothing but big dividends and share buybacks. And that company was called Boeing. And, you know, a different sector, yeah, they make airplanes. They're aerospace. They're not mining. But you want to be careful that you don't take all this money that you got and just literally, you know, flush it out into the market. And you're not sticking to what you need to do, which is, in Boeing's case, you know, build a better airplane. But in mining's case, take that money and go back out and replace and find those deposits that you're digging up, the 50 and 40 and 30 year old deposits. You're living off the legacy of people who are long deceased, if not, you know, maybe they're retired or in a nursing home or something. That you need to get out there and explore on your own, or be buying up the companies that have done the hard work, you know. And we don't see nearly enough of that. We should, perhaps we will, but we're not seeing it yet.
So Byron, when do these smaller companies finally get cheap enough for the big guys to take them over? Because you're right, we haven't seen the M&A. That directly impacts the juniors, because if the juniors aren't getting bought up, then all we're seeing is more and more resources being found. But that just means there's more and more resources in the market. So those resources, unfortunately, they're seeming to get lower valuations. What do you think spurs some M&A activity?
Well, you know, you would think that the situation of, you know, burning up your reserves and not replacing them would generate a process that, you know, like literally every year, every 2 years, you know, there would be this M&A cycle. We haven't seen it. The big companies are not doing their job. They are, in many respects, they're letting the air out of the junior sector in terms of exploration and early stage development. The explorers and early stage development teams are doing their job. You know, I know, we were there last week in Vancouver. We saw dozens and dozens and dozens of companies out there at Vancouver who have done terrific work in the last, you know, pick a number, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. You know, they are just better companies in every respect. You know, more exploration, better geology, better geophysics, smarter geologists, better management teams. They've raised money during good times and bad times. You know, they kept the roof on the house during COVID when you couldn't travel across international borders. A lot of companies out there have done really, really great jobs. And the punchline is their share prices are down to ridiculously low levels. When you say, how low can they go? Well, I don't know. I guess you can always go lower. But at some point, you know, these companies are bargains out there just waiting to be, you know, waiting to be bought into, which is good for, you know, retail investors right now. If you care to wade into the market, you know, tumult out there, and then be willing to ride it through the storm. You know, I mean, when you look at what's happening in the rest of the big market, you know, the so-called tech markdown, you know, the fangs, that, you know, the Facebook and the Netflix and all that who have dived down, or even crypto. Crypto was this, oh, crypto. Yeah, great. Crypto's lost $1.5 trillion with a T dollars worth of value in the last, you know, what is it, like 2.5-3 months. You know, and at the same time, you've got companies out there that have copper in the ground and gold in the ground and nickel in the ground. And that copper, gold, nickel, it's not going anywhere. And the thing is that you can't, you know, when they talk about we're going to mine a Bitcoin or we're going to mine another crypto, we're just going to take the computers and we're going to crunch them and we're going to mine another. Yeah, right. Some of this stuff that the real miners mine has been in the ground for a billion years and 2 billion years, 2.5 billion years. You're not making any more of that stuff. If you've got control of that kind of resource, you know, up in the Precambrian of Canada, or, you know, in the Andes Mountains of South America, or in, you know, Sonora, Mexico, or so, if you got control of that, nobody can sort of regenerate that just by, you know, using a bigger, better computer algorithm and, you know, more computers, more electricity or something.
Yeah, that is fair. The problem is costs are going up too. So it is more expensive to pull this stuff out of the ground. And as I said, look, there are more resources out there. 1 million ounce gold resource is nowhere as attractive as it used to be 5, 10, 15 years ago, because it seems like a lot of these companies that have been around for that period of time do have at least 1 million ounces, sometimes up to 4-5 million ounces, and it seems like they're waiting to get taken out. Some of these companies moving through more economic studies. Fact of the matter is, the potential acquiring companies, they would do their own internal studies. It really turns out to be one of this waiting game type of aspects. Byron, how are you valuing resources in the ground then? Because as I said, per ounce, per pound of copper, it seems like they are getting less and less value as we progress through this even bull market that we can call it.
Well, there's lots of different ways to do it. I mean, one of the things that you look at is, you know, who is the management team? You know, what's their track record? What have they done before? And then also, you know, what's the jurisdiction? It's one thing to have 1 million ounces of gold, you know, in the Northwest Territories. You know, it's another thing to have 1 million ounces of gold, you know, in certain parts of Quebec. You know, and like you say, 1 million ounces, it ain't what it used to be. I'll mention a company, Banyan Gold, B-A-N-Y-A-N Gold, in the Yukon. They revised their resource estimate from 1 million to around 4 million ounces. Recently. And, you know, now that is worth looking at. They are, you know, terrific geology. Every time they drill holes, they seem to find something else, you know, knock on wood, right on a highway, right next to power lines, right down the street from another mining development that just, you know, came online 2, 3, 4 years ago, you know. And so a very developable project, you know. I mean, it's one of the reasons why Banyan Gold has not really suffered, I would say, the downdraft that many other companies in the gold space have, you know. You know, another company I like in the U.S. is Group 10 Metals out in Montana, in the Stillwater District, literally, absolutely right adjacent to the Sibanye-Stillwater play. I mean, you can go out there and you can stand with 1 foot on Sibanye-Stillwater and another foot on the Group 10, you know, mineral claims, again, you know, copper, nickel, cobalt, platinum group metals, gold, even chrome. Chrome. Nobody mines chrome anymore. But, you know, I mean, they've got it out there. So, you know, again, you know, really nice plays right in the middle of, you know, good jurisdictions, you know, with roads and power and, you know, workforce, all that sort of thing. So, you know, when you talk about there's lots of million ounces out there, there's lots of 2 million ounces. Yeah, but, you know, you want to look at who's the management team and you want to look at where are they, you know, who are the neighbors. And so those are just some of the things that I think go through my head as I, you know, evaluate these guys to give them, you know, to give them the thumbs up sign.
Byron, I appreciate that. Didn't even need to ask you for some of your favorite companies. So thanks for getting right into those. Dealing with management teams, then look, some of the most successful management teams over history here have actually slowly started to retire. There has been a general new blood in the sector with some younger management teams that seem to have some fairly attractive properties and assets. How do you go about evaluating these teams if, quite frankly, they've come into the sector in the last 10 years when there hasn't been much M&A? And that's a key distinction I find within management teams.
Yeah, well, again, you know, it's important to go to the conferences. It's important to meet the teams. It's in my experience, and at least pre-COVID, you know this. I mean, I used to travel a lot, you know, I mean, for the last 2 years for myself and pretty much everybody. I mean, travel was restricted, but travel is opening up again. My view of it is, you know, the older management teams, they might be retiring, you know, but I'm still around. And, you know, I used to travel a lot. I used to kick the rocks a lot, you know, go out to the core shack, talk with the geologists, talk with the management teams. That's all going to be happening again in terms of at least what I do, you know. So I think that, I mean, the resources are there. They need to be developed. We are in a world that is so resource short and that is so underinvested in, undercapitalized in. And you can say that about mines and minerals, and you can say that about so much, you know. I mean, in a tangential sort of way, you know, the people who are listening to this podcast, you're probably aware that there's a baby formula crisis in America. You know, it's in the, you know, people are talking about it. They're flying in baby formula from Europe and all, because that whole, you know, that whole situation managed to get underinvested over a period of years, and there's not enough. Well, guess what? You know, there's an electricity shortage in America too. We're going to have it this summer. We're going to have blackouts in the Midwest and the Far West. You know, we have underinvested in baseload power. We've underinvested in a grid system. You know, we've underinvested in so much. You know, this whole world, certainly the U.S., much of Canada, has been underinvested for so long, and it's all about to hit the fan, you know. And it's either going to hit the fan in a bad way. Well, it will hit the fan in a bad way for many people, many places, many things. But, you know, in investment terms, you know, if you want to put yourself out there, you know, with your catcher's mitt, you're going to be able to, you know, find some really great things in the sweet spots of that catch up, of that mad scramble to make up for lost time. And when people say, oh, we're going to have a copper crisis. No, we're not going to have a copper crisis. We have a copper crisis. Oh, you know, there's lots of million ounce gold deposits out there. Yeah, but in the world that's evolving, people are going to be buying million ounces of gold, you know, hand over fist. You know, because look what's going on with inflation, with the dollar. The dollar is ruining itself with, you know, 8%, 10% inflation. And, you know, we were speaking, you know, before about this. I mean, inflation really depends on, you know, where you are and how you live. I mean, if you drive a lot, inflation is a heck of a lot more than 8%. You know, I mean, if you're the price of your gasoline or your diesel fuel has gone up, you know, by 80 or 100%, you know, so if you're in the right spot, and if you get out there in front of where this thing is going, the opportunities are there. You know, are we going to fix the culture? Well, I hope so. I hope that we flush a lot of the culture of the last 50 years down the tubes, because, you know, a heck of a lot of good it was. I mean, look where it got us. But, that, you know, that's a big arm waving kind of argument. From the standpoint of the investors, you want to be where, the need is, you know, and like I said, there's not going to be a minerals crisis. There is a minerals crisis. We don't have enough nickel, not enough copper, not enough cobalt. You know, there was a talk out in Vancouver by a fellow that silver is the new lithium in terms of, you know, where even something like solar power is going. For the amount of solar power that's going to be built, you know, there's just not enough silver. So there's lots of arguments to be made for why minerals in the ground, ore deposits, refining, processing capabilities are going to be the sweet spot of the next, you know, of the next decade, let's say.
So Byron, before I get you out of here, then sounds like you are encouraged for a wide range of resources. Any that are your favorite that you care to share with us, you think have the best upside from here?
Well, if you'd asked me that, you know, 3 or 4 months ago, I would have said energy, energy, and energy. But since then, energy, energy, energy has gone up, you know, remarkably high. I mean, I do think if you say, you know, what else is going to go up? Well, I think energy, energy, energy is going to keep going up. In terms of what is the most hated part of energy right now, I would say it's offshore oil and gas. So if you have any interest at all in offshore oil and gas, that's a place to look for, you know, for when the wheel turns on that. In terms of just sort of the general build out that has to happen, I mean, engineering firms that actually design and build, you know, the power grid that we're going to need, those guys are going to do well. In terms of the mines and the mining and such, you know, the big guys, I mean, I mentioned BHP, Rio, I mean, they're paying a nice dividend right now. It's not a bad place to park money and collect a dividend, even though I sort of, you know, I question the, you know, the long term, you know, where they're putting that much money, you know, out into the street as opposed to back into the ground. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Things will turn. You know, I think that energy and resources are a great place to be. And I would avoid all of the hypey stuff of the last years. All the COVID, the COVID companies, you know, the Pelotons and the Netflix, that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, they were a flash in the pan. It's time to get real. It's time for the world to get real. If you're an investor who has not yet gotten real, if you're one of those, oh, I'm a young guy and I play my game stocks and all that stuff. Yeah, that's nice. You had your fun. But like I said earlier, crypto just lost $1.5 trillion worth of value. I guarantee you the copper industry, the gold industry, the nickel industry, the oil industry, they have not lost $1.5 trillion worth of value, because that's where you want to be.
All right, Byron, we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you very much and welcome back to the show. I'm going to have you back on much more regularly. I always appreciate the way that you especially dissect through companies. We'll dive a bit more into some companies next time I have you on. Everybody, thanks for tuning into this weekend show. I hope you all enjoyed our commentary, and I know it can be a challenging market these days as everything seems to be broadly moving down, or if it's not moving down, it's going no bid. But the environment eventually will change. It seems like we're all just still waiting for the Fed to switch course. Who knows when that is going to be. Byron, everybody, again, thank you for taking time on this weekend show. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.